रामाय रामभद्राय रामचंद्राय वेद से रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीतायाः पतये नमः. सुंदरकांड चैप्टर नंबर 15 सीता एंड मारुति. इफ पॉसिबल आफ्टर लिसनिंग टू दिस रेसिटेशन प्लीज ऑफर द डिविटी सम एक्स्ट्रा स्वीट्स और फ्रूट्स. द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ. From his lofty perch upon that tree, Hanuman sought for Sita all around, and the earth and the groves that covered it did not escape his piercing eye. The effulgence from the Kalpaka and other trees from the heaven of Indra made broad daylight far and wide. Cuckoos sang sweet and pleasant. The Ashoka burnt with fierce light like unto fire and the morning sun, with their fruits and flowers of gold. In short, every kind and variety of flower of all seasons found a place therein. Some trees were gaily decked with jeweled patterns of flowers. Maruti beheld many an Ashoka tree covered from head to toe with fruit, leaf and flower, and seeking the welcome repose of Mother Earth under the weight that was too much for it. Myriads of birds of wonderful variety flew down upon them and seemed to give them the appearance of a tree entirely denuded of leaves. Watercourses were gay with golden lotuses in bloom. The grove charmed away the hearts of the beholders with its sweet perfumes and charming scenery. Why? There was found in it every type of bird and beast that could delight the eye and the heart. It was thickly dotted with terraces and mansions, palaces of noblemen, seats, sofas, couches, carpets, rugs, and lounges within. There was no spot unadorned, and the Nandana grove of Indra was a pale object by its side. It gave one the notion that all around the space was on fire, such was the sheen of trees. Champaka, Saptaparna, Ingudi, and other rare trees, deeply rooted and stately, were to be found there among the Ashokas of the color of gold, fire, or jet. Most heart entrancing, almost impossible to describe, of wonderful splendor and glory, like the Nandana of Indra, it dispensed the Chaitraratha of Kubera. The thick clusters of flowers gave it the appearance of a starlit sky, or the ocean beds paved with gems, or the holy mountain Gandhamandana by its leaf, flower, fruit of all seasons, fragrant trees, honey-laden beasts and birds of rich variety, and a sweet blend of their joyful praise. And in the midst of their grove, not far from the place of its concealment, Maruti discovered a lofty mansion. It was thousand-pillared, spotlessly white, and very much like Mount Kailasa. Its steps of coral and platform of gold dazzled the eye. Then, in a mansion nearby the Simshipa tree, Maruti beheld a lady, a noble dame. All around her, the Rakshasis were on guard with unwinking watchfulness. She was lean and emaciated through long fast. A single garment worked in gold, but dirty and ragged, she wore on her body covered with dust. There were no ornaments befitting her youth. Tears coursed down in torrents from her dark eyes. Like a forest glade thick with dun woods in winter, her raven locks were twined in a single braid and hung below her waist like unto a black serpent. Heavy sighs burst out now and then, overpowered with shame at being exposed to the gaze of strange eyes. She was tortured with grief at being torn from the arms of her beloved. It was plain that the fire of her wifely devotion could, if she willed, consume this vast universe to ashes. No adamant, however hard, was proof against the sight of her misery. She was lost in the thoughts of her dear Lord and sunk in the depths of sorrow at being away from him. She shrank into herself, as it were, through grief and, alas, knew no other companion, no other refuge but that. forced from those near and dear to her, and thrown in the midst of hideous Rakshasis, she reminded one of a hind, far away from her kind and baited by fierce hounds. Poor girl, grief and sorrow, gloom and melancholy, danger and misfortune were utterly unknown to her. Happiness, joy, pleasure and comfort and everything bright and cheerful waited upon her. Now grief unspeakable consumed her heart, and one could make her out as Lady Janaki only by the careful observation of her matchless beauty and perfect shape. She put the fancy into one's head of the rays of the moon, pure and spotless at the beginning of the bright fortnight, or of a blazing fire hid under a cloud of smoke, or of a lotus pool bereft of its flowers, or of the lovely Lady Rohini torn from her dear lord the moon and in the cruel clutches of Mars. Marathi gazed intently upon that lady, dark with dust and dirt, lank and lean and broad-eyed, and decided unto himself by sound reasons that she is no other than the beautiful Lady Sita. I see not the slightest difference between this noble dame and her whom I beheld when she was carried away by Ravana, who could command any shape he willed. A face like unto the moon in her orb, eyebrows like the delicate bow in the hands of Cupid, eyes broad and full like the petals of lotus, tinged slightly red and trembling in a fright like a haunted fawn, dark raven hair, eyelashes black as jet and delicately curved, coral lips, breasts full and gloriously fashioned like globes of gold, slim waist, all these on a closer view confirming in my conclusion that this is Lady Sita and no other. The space around far and near is lighted by the splendor of her body. Her limbs are well shaped and perfectly knit. She might be most easily mistaken for Lady Rati, the wife of God of Love. Like the lady of the night in her full, she is an object that the entire creation would yearn to look at. I see the marks of perfect womanhood on her body and limbs. She looks as if in deep meditation, like a hermit as she sits on the ground and heaves deep sighs. But it would be death to approach her, even like the dear queen of the Lord of Nagas. Her glory and splendor is lost behind the thick dark veil of grief unutterable, even like a blazing fire hid under the clouds of smoke. The holy texts of Manu and other sages that are of doubtful import, a fortune on the wane, earnestness without confidence, hopes unfulfilled, success barred by obstacles, a noble intellect bewildered, a fair fame blasted with foul calumny, the glory of the moon in the dark jaws of surcharged rain clouds, heterodox knowledge unknown to fame and reverence through being deprived of the basic foundation of the scriptures, the Vedic chants dim and hazy through irregular and spasmodic recitation. All these fancies flit across one's brain at the sight of this Lady Sita separated from her beloved Rama. She is at the end of her hopes that her dear Lord Rama would come again to rescue her. She is but a shadow of her former self from the cankering shame at being polluted by the touch of Ravana. Friendless, helpless in the midst of her enemies, her frightened look falls all around, for she knows not what further evil may befall her at any moment. The heavy tears have dimmed her face. The best and the brightest ornament do but derive a luster and glory from being worn by her, but now she has cast them away from her. Thus, and very awise, did Hanuman reason within himself, gaze at her as he may ever so often. He could not clear his mind of haunting doubts. A novice at his studies, in the stage of his ignorance of the language and the science of it, interprets a pregnant text wrongly. But when his ignorance is gone by, he labors hard and is awarded by the correct rendering of the same passage. Even so, the Lady Janaki, bereft of ornament of any kind, was extremely difficult to identify from the description that Rama gave and his own momentary observation. But Maruti did not despair. He assured himself through some other reasons that she was the Lady Sita of broad and lovely eyes and fair-famed. He cast his piercing looks all around and slowly made out that all the ornaments that Rama had described to him as being worn by her were hung from the overhanging trees about. Curiously fashioned earrings, bracelets of coral and gems, chains, rings and such like jewels were blackened with the consuming fire that raged in her heart at being away from her beloved, but through long wear they left marks upon her body even in their absence. These verily are the ornaments that Rama described to me, such as were dropped by her in our midst as we sat on the mountain, are not here. The rest I see before me. It is this lady and no other that threw down to us as she was spirited away through the skies her upper garment of yellow and gold and her sweet sounding ornaments. The robe that she wears now is dark from long use and ragged, but I see not the slightest difference in the matter of her dress or complexion or splendor as I beheld her from the Mount Rishimukha. Even though it should come about from this favorite queen of Raghava, this paragon of wifely devotion, this golden vision should become naught, yet she is always present in the heart of Rama. There is not the slightest doubt in my mind that this is the very same lady. Verily, this is the self-same lady Sita about whom Rama grieves ever so sore for reasons untold. The meanest object in creation counts it as a duty and quite naturally that it should ward off danger and sorrow from her who has sought the shelter of its love. But alas, I have lowered myself even far beyond it. Thus utter compassion melts his heart. Have I not laid it down as a law unto myself that I will not fail to cast my shield over him that seeks refuge in me? Now this, my wife, my beloved, has fought for the privilege of coming with me to the forest and sharing my dangers and difficulties. And she does it nobly, cheerfully, and incites me by her example. And such a one has been easily abandoned by me to the tender mercy of the bloodthirsty Rakshasas. Thus tenderness and compassion gnaws at his heart. The holy text tells us that the wife is the better half of man. I called upon the Lord of Fire to witness the holy sacraments of our wedlock, and her have I lost beyond hope. Thus remorse and grief assail him with overwhelming force. Torn from the arms of the life of my life, the light of my eyes, my twin soul, yet this wretched frame of mine crumbles not. Thus he was consumed with the slow but intense flames of separation from his love. A closer view confirms me the belief that these two evince no difference in appearance from shape, build and constitution. So I decide that this gem of womanhood is in every way a fit mate for my Lord. Her heart is ever twined around him and his heart centers in her. Else, is it in any way possible that these two could keep their hold upon life even for a second without each other? When the Lord Raghava was grieving sore for the Lady Sita and raving like a madman, I almost laughed at him and mocked his grief. What a curious inconsistency! This Raghuvira claims to be the disciple of the thrice holy saint Vasishtha. He allows himself to be considered as one for whom knowledge and wisdom, lay and occult, have no secrets. He is ranked among the foremost of warriors with frame of iron, nerves of steel, and whom dangers and difficulties, hardships and privations, grief and sorrow assail not. An ideal grieves and raves over the loss of an ordinary woman. But I spoke from the viewpoint most ignorant of a celibate and of an utter stranger to woman and everything connected with her. But now I have with these eyes beheld her marvelous beauty and utter abasement. I have not the shadow of a doubt that I am the prince of fools. Well, well, live and learn. And I have been taught the lesson of my life. I was suffering from a swollen head at the thought of my most wondrous achievement of crossing the expanse of waters. But my Lord Rama has lost this peerless lady of his and yet clings to life. The most wonderful feat that breaks all previous records and beats them hollow. Most strange that the raging fire of his grief consumes him not. It is almost impossible for me to conceive how he could be away from the side of this most noble lady even for a second and yet counts himself among the living. Well, what is it to him? He is a prince, the heir apparent to the throne of the Ikshvakus. Government, war, chase, elephant, horses, chariot, and weapons are more in his line than the signs of winning the heart of a noble lady. And yet what a prince! The shadow of one, the mockery as it were. A most worthy prince he is, doubtless, who has allowed himself to be robbed of the sense of his power, might, and fame. A most exemplary prince and lord he is, who casts to his enemies him who seeks refuge from them. But the same cannot be said of the Lady Sita. She is not free to act as she wills. She is the wife of another, and his word is a law unto her. She cannot, in duty bound, cast away her tortured frame unless he bids her to do so. Now Rama is his own master, independent, absolutely free to think and act. And then that body of his is not himself. It was but taken for a purpose. One keeps it on naturally to enjoy the pleasures of life and not to be racked and tortured by grief and pain. A violent death and suicide is most heinous, most reprehensible. But Rama has in himself the remedy. The raging fires of grief are quite enough for the work. Marathi again cast his eyes on the Lady Sita, who sat there absorbed in her thoughts of Rama, wan, pale, clad in a single garment, soiled with dust and dirt, and his heart rejoiced thereat. He laid himself at the feet of Sri Rama, whose image was enthroned in his heart, and lauded him, saying, "Thrice fortunate are you, and no doubt of it, who claims as his wife the noble lady who reserves from stain her wifely purity in the strong hope of being united to you someday. Mangalam Kaushalendraya Mahaniya Gunavdeye Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam."